And joining me safely distanced by telephone is Professor Allison Lee. She is an assistant professor of art history in the Art and Architecture, the College of Art and Architecture, and she is in the Department of Visual Arts here at UL Lafayette. She has just published her book through Bloomsbury Visual Arts. It's entitled Picturing Russia's Men, Masculinity and Modernity in 19th Century Painting. That is a mouthful, Allison. And I know we have a lot of art lovers in the Lafayette community, and many of them certainly are involved in exhibits that happen either at the Hilliard or at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. So you have a lot of art lovers. We may have to introduce them to the world of Russian painting, and particularly Russian paintings of men in particular. But before we do that, getting into your book, which I find fascinating, I'd like you to talk just a bit about what you do here at the university. You're a professor in art history. So do you teach general art history? Do you have classes in specific eras of art? What is your teaching like at the university?
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about the book, as you said, socially distant, safely distant from one another. But I'm a professor of art history here at UL, and I teach a range of courses. They really keep us on our feet in terms of the amount that we're expected to cover and the amount that students need. So I teach a number of general courses, courses that we call the Survey of Art History, kind of a classic, very traditional masterpieces course that goes from cave painting and upper Paleolithic stone figures all the way to the most contemporary works being made essentially today. I do teach one general or sort of upper level course that's generally geared towards my particular expertise, which is in 18th and 19th century Russian art. I'm teaching it, in fact, in the spring. If any students are listening and have always wanted to jump into this upper level class, it's on Russian, Soviet, and Central Asian art from Peter the Great and to about the 1970s, 1980s, I think, is usually as far as we get. So it runs the gamut. Every kind of art history I am at some point or other, you know, able to speak to in the classroom.
How did you get interested in your area of expertise, Russian painting? What really caught your passion for that?
Oh, it's something of a funny story, and I like how often I get asked about it because it always kind of forces me to go back in my mind to the roots of what ended up being so many years of study and now is a book and all this and that. But in college, I was originally a Russian studies major. I think I always hoped that I would maybe serve in the government or work as a translator. I was much more interested initially in sort of economics and social sciences and less on the cultural side. But I took a general education art history class called From Caves to Cathedrals as an undergraduate.
Name.
Yeah, at American University in Washington, D.C. And the moment that the wonderful professor turned the lights off and began talking about the artworks in the dark, I was hooked. I thought, oh no, this is a thing. I could be this person in the dark talking about beautiful works of art. And lo and behold, when I went to talk to her, you know, when I started thinking about graduate school, and we were talking about how art historians need to specialize geographically and in time period, essentially, I discovered that very few people study Russian art before the 20th century. So I thought, okay, let me put these two things together. I'd already been studying the language for a number of years. And when I found out there was a space where not a lot of people are working, at least in the Western world, I really thought that I could make a contribution to my field. So that's what I did.
Well, and I love the way you described what really hooked you, that sense of sitting in the dark, somebody talking about art, seeing the slides. I think a lot of us have that memory from college, you know, taking an art history class, and it's magical. It takes you someplace else. And I can well understand why your passion grew from that class. Well, you know, Russian literature certainly is studied before the 20th century. You know, a lot of people love 19th century Russian literature and novels, and there's a lot about masculinity and men in those novels. You're really struck by that. So you mentioned that before you got into the cultural, artistic part of Russia, you were interested in economics and sociology. And this book feels like it's kind of a combination of that, this idea that you're talking about masculinity and the way Russian men thought about themselves. So tell us a bit about that. Why did you gravitate towards this particular subject? And what was it about the art and then this idea of looking at the greater culture to explain phenomena?
Well, you have hit the nail on the head in terms of surmising that this is a very interdisciplinary project and that it has roots actually in Russian literature. You're so right that in terms of 19th century Russian culture, it's mostly the great literary figures, Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Chekhov, and the composers, you know, the Tchaikovsky and Mussorgsky that we think about. We think, or we know, at least in America, very little about their painterly equivalents. And all those composers and writers knew the great painters that I talk about in this book. So I think the project originally stemmed from the dissertation that I wrote in graduate school at Rutgers University, which attempted to kind of examine a Russian literary phenomenon, a character type that we call in Russian the lishny chelovyek, the superfluous man, who's the angsty, you know, can't get out of bed, bored, just kind of existential ennui to the extreme. The dissertation tried to see, well, you know, does he show up, this guy, the superfluous man and types like him, in painting, or is this a purely literary phenomenon? And by the time I got out of grad school and had written the dissertation and was thinking about, okay, how can this become a book, I think that's when I realized I really needed to branch out in terms of studying masculinity in the Russian context, but even in a larger kind of context. And I started reading, as you said, the sociology of masculinity, reading much more widely just in gender and sexuality studies, you know, histories of masculinity in various sectors. And out of that, I kind of honed the project to be much more what it ended up becoming in terms of this interdisciplinary study that centers on painting, certainly, but makes reference to literature, makes references to theories that are well beyond the realm of art history.
Before we continue exploring the book, I'd like to let our listeners know that my guest is Allison Lee. She is a professor, an assistant professor of art history here at UL Lafayette in the Department of Visual Arts in the College of Art and Architecture. She has just published her first book, major book, Picturing Russia's Men, Masculinity and Modernity in 19th Century Painting. It has been published by Bloomsbury Visual Arts, and you can find out more about the book if you're not taking notes, careful notes here while we're talking, you can find out more through Bloomsbury Visual Arts. It's a fascinating book. So you studied more widely about this sociological phenomena of the Russian man, and you were finding him depicted in the paintings. Tell us the names of some of these painters that we may not have heard of before.
Oh, sure. So the book kind of proceeds by a case study model. So each chapter is on a different Russian artist. So it's a nice little kind of introduction to some of the major figures that are well known in Russia, but not so much here. So it begins in kind of 1820s, 1830s with a typical neoclassical painter named Karl Brulov. And then it proceeds to 30s and 40s, Pavel Fedotov, who's actually a military officer, but wants to become a painter and very much succeeds, does so by the 1840s. Then I examine this kind of group of artists and Artel that arises in the 1860s. There's an artist that provides a really nice examination of sort of homosexual dynamics or homoerotic dynamics. His name is Alexander Ivanov. And then the closing chapters are about probably the most well-known of the realist painters. Though I say well-known, we know, you know, not many people know these figures, but Ivan Kramskoy and Ilya Repin, who are what we call pitted Bezhniki artists. The Wanderers movement is becoming more familiar in art history in at least some sectors.
Well, I think most of us are familiar with French, British, American portrait painters of that time period. And we're, you know, we kind of have images in our head of how men are depicted in these. You brought up military person, you know, obviously there are generals, particularly, you know, British and American. We've seen portraits of these people. And so we're aware of how men are depicted in these portraits and paintings. How are they depicted in Russian paintings that might say something about this particular Russian male type you're exploring?
Well, they're not depicted all that much differently from their French and American and British and German counterparts, as you said. I think partly what's fascinating about Russian art in these earlier periods in the 18th and definitely the 19th century is how much they're imitating, especially the French, who are the kind of major scene setters in this moment. And a lot of the book, you discover that these Russian painters, to a large extent, are not even necessarily working in Russia. Brulov and Ivanov, two of the figures that I mentioned, are primarily working in Rome for a good amount of their careers. Then, of course, many others are working primarily in Petersburg. The other three that I mentioned are mostly centered in what's then the capital. But they're looking west, and they're imitating the portrait styles, the genre painting styles, the history painting styles. And in many ways, I think one could write a similar book to this one, and others have, about, you know, how is masculinity demonstrated in terms of its various facets, in terms of what men are expected to look like, to act like, what's valued for men. This characterizes, as far as I'm concerned, just about all painting practice in all countries. Art is always going to be a means of assessing various social and political and economic dynamics in life. So that's maybe the a little bit of a cagey answer, but one that you know speaks to the interesting intersections between East and West in this moment.
So as you explore the progression of these paintings from the early 19th century through, you know, up towards the 20th century, how are you seeing that evolving depiction of Russian men? What do they look like? What is their emotional attitude in a lot of these paintings? How does that change?
Oh, it's dark, I would say. I think partly what the book uncovers is that there are these endless kind of expectations for men that are often contradictory in terms of what they're meant to look like, the way they're meant to hold themselves, the way that they're meant to ideally dress, that men are endlessly failing to live up to. And that maybe we could see, painting this, of course, in broad strokes, early in the century, around the time of Napoleon, when Russia is really substantiating itself nationally as a force, it's culturally distinctive and really feeling quite proud of itself because of its defeat of Napoleon when the rest of Europe essentially couldn't do it. Though I'm sure the British would have something to say about that. But there's kind of firmer structures for what men are supposed to, all the things I just said, look like, act like, dress like, so on and so forth, that begin to fragment over the course of the century and become increasingly either conflicted or paradoxical or difficult to live up to, such that by the end of the century, when I'm assessing paintings, really in the 1880s is about as far as this book goes, there just aren't these stable kind of symbolic orders that painting can be a part of or ascribe to as there are in the 18, say, 10s and even 20s, maybe.
So how are they depicted? I'm trying to imagine myself in your class in the dark, and you're describing what you're describing, but I'm seeing slides.
Oh gosh! So, I didn't know. I'm sorry if I misunderstood the question.
No.
What you're asking to do is like the hardest thing there is.
Yes,
is,
to
you
describe
know, on the radio, describe these paintings that most people have never seen before.
That's right. But like, what do they look like? What? How would you describe generally? Because I'm sure each painting is different. But what do the men start to look like? I don't know if people are imagining they're going from like pristine, you know, military bearing to kind of. I don't know, something out of Crime and Punishment, or
you know that. Wow, you're so prescient in terms of. I would say again, kind of painting in a very broad strokes, not to oversimplify, but what you just said is totally correct. If you just thumb through the book, in the introduction, I look at a military gallery, portraits of the great Napoleonic generals that fought in the Russian war against Napoleon. And they're very traditional, upstanding, every man in a uniform, every man clean shaven, you know, posture, all epaulets, all the usual. And then if you look at the last chapter in the book, you get portraits of men that are so remarkable because they're in states of injury or debility or in the throes of alcoholism with the signs of that on their bodies, on their faces, or they're, you know, in states of very deep depression. The cover of the book is a portrait of a famous short story sort of novelist, Vsevolod Garshin, who unfortunately committed suicide in the 1880s by throwing himself downstairs. And the picture that Repin, his friend, paints of him is just heartbreaking in terms of all of that kind of, you know, military, firm, masculine, phallic, kind of upright symbology has just totally broken down by the end of the century. And artists are interested in that breakdown. They're not shying away from it. Realism allows them to explore those areas that just weren't possible in earlier eras.
Well, that was a great description. You did a good job talking about that difference, that contrast between the beginning of the century and later on. And then, of course, you know, many of us, you know the history of early 20th century with the Russian Revolution, what that all of this is leading up to. How many, there are some full color images in the book?
Oh, yes. I got very lucky. Bloomsbury gave me 16 color plates, which is quite fabulous, you know, just regardless, but to show some of these paintings for, you know, for the first time to English readers in color like this is really exciting.
Right.
And then there are 60 black and whites beyond that. So 76 total images. It's quite a lot.
Where are most of these paintings housed? Are they mostly in Russia still?
Yeah, they're mostly in Russia. I think only one of them, I'm trying to, scouring my brain, maybe two of the paintings are on American soil. In fact, the painting I was just describing of Garshin that's on the cover of the book is in the Metropolitan Museum of Art's collection in New York. So I almost kind of strategically chose that for the cover because I wanted to bridge this gap between, you know, what's here and what's there. But the vast majority are in the Tretyakov Gallery in Moscow and in the Russian Museum in St. Petersburg.
So what a treat and a resource for those of us interested in art to be able to see this book, see the images and read about it as well, you know, unless we're planning to fly to Russia. what a great opportunity. And I want to tell people who are listening and becoming fascinated by the subject, my guest is Professor Allison Lee. She is an assistant professor of art history here at UL Lafayette. Her first major book has just been published by Bloomsbury Visual Arts. The title is Picturing Russia's Men, Masculinity and Modernity in 19th Century Painting. It's just come out by Bloomsbury, and you can find out more through that website. And now, we were discussing before we went on air, Allison, how difficult this time has been for publishers and writers, people publishing their books, to get word out there, to have book parties. So how are you getting the word out there? Are you having any kind of virtual release, or how's that going?
Well, you're making me think I should plan one. It sounds like maybe that's the
Zoom
thing to do. Yeah, Zoom virtual book party. Actually, that sounds like a lot of fun. You know, mostly it's been the old-fashioned academic style giving talks that are derived from the book. I just presented on Friday of last week at the big Slavic Studies conference. The organization is called ACES. And I presented just a small excerpt from the last chapter in the book and did something similar over the summer for the NYU Jordan Center, which is for the advanced study of Russian culture. So I think I'm mostly just doing things like that. And I know that we had been planning at the Hilliard for me to do a book talk actually in the spring that was canceled / postponed when COVID forced everything to go remote. So I hope that we're able to get that back up and running, you know, once the Hilliard is planning more in-person events. And certainly I can, you know, publicize that once we end up doing it.
So for those of us who weren't fortunate enough to go to the Slavic Studies conference and hear you, we're very glad to be, you know, talking with you today to hear about this fascinating book. And it's always fascinating to hear what professors here at UL are doing, what they're studying, what they're writing about. It is just a myriad of subjects. We're so fortunate to have this resource in our community, and just a delight to hear you talk about, you know, what you're teaching, what you're studying, what you're publishing. It's all happening right here in our community. So that's delightful. So how do you feel about the subject now that, you know, you've published your book? Do you feel like this is a subject you want to continue to explore, or are you going to, what are you going to learn about next?
Well, let me thank you first, you know, for saying what you did about how exciting the work that we professors at UL and just in the community in Lafayette are doing. I appreciate that so much. And I couldn't agree with you more that there's just such a gamut of great work being done. And I appreciate you and KRVS, you know, sponsoring the talking about it and kind of facilitating us getting the word out about these projects. As to your question, I feel good about it, I guess. I don't know. It's so strange. It feels surreal in a way to work on something for so many years and then just get a box filled with copies of the book. It's just, I can't, in a way, I can't believe it's done. I miss these guys. You know, that sounds strange to say it. My students will laugh if they hear that because I think they know I'm something of a kind of method actor in terms of being a historian. I just get very into whatever era I'm studying or, you know, whatever figure I'm working on. I think of them as my friends, my someone I'm keeping close to me. So the men in this book, I think I miss sometimes in terms of reading their letters and looking at their works and thinking about their lives, their pain, their joy. But I'm already on to the next project, already on, I hope, to the next book. And continue to work on masculinity a little bit less so in the Russian sector, at least right now. I think I need maybe a little bit of a break from that particular culture. And there's so much fascinating art in Europe more generally to study. So kind of segueing to new stuff, but we'll see where my career takes me in terms of where I circle back to.
Well, we'll look forward to having you back to talk about that. And like you mentioned, you're teaching a class in the spring that people might find interesting and they would learn more about the subject and what you're working on. But we do appreciate you introducing us to these Russian men who have become your friends, both the painters and their subjects, and certainly broadens our world. And we're deeply grateful for that. Again, Professor Allison Lee, her book, Picturing Russia's Men, Masculinity and Modernity in 19th Century Painting, published by Bloomsbury Visual Arts. And you can find out more about the book through Bloomsbury. Easy to search and find out more. Well, thank you, Allison, and good luck with the end of the semester and your classes in the springtime. And maybe we'll see you on Zoom for a virtual book release party somewhere. Let us know about it if you have it.
I sure will. Thank you so much, Judith. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Allison.